You will join us in the Great Link. Open your thoughts, allow us to understand you.
Welcome back, everybody, to ShuttlePod, the TrekMovie.com podcast. We have so many things that we want to talk about on this podcast, and we want it to be as eclectic as our website is in terms of all the different kinds of topics that we cover. Today, we're going to be discussing some of the latest news that's cropped up in the Trek universe, including the possibility of Rick Berman coming to the Las Vegas Creation Convention next year in 2016, what we know, or more accurately, what we don't know about Star Trek Beyond, and new fan projects that are out, like the Red Shirt Diaries, the latest episode of Star Trek Continues, and a newly released book, Star Trek Costumes, 5 Decades of Fashion from the Final Frontier. Plus, we're going to close with a fun little bit from Jared about how does Trek invade your everyday life. So I am Kayla, and I'm here with cohorts Brian.
Hello.
And Jared.
Greetings, friends.
Let's kick this off. Brian, why don't you talk to us a bit about what's going on with Rick Berman in the news?
All right. So last week, Rick Berman got on the Twitters and made a little announcement that I think probably sent a few people in a tizzy. To quote, he said the 50th, meaning the 50th anniversary of the Star Trek franchise, is pretty important. A lot of folks have asked me to appear in Vegas. I think I'm going to end my 20-year absence and attend. So that's kind of a big deal since Rick has, with the exception of appearing on the Blu-ray extras and having this Twitter account, has more or less disappeared since his time controlling the Star Trek franchise came to an end, which was in 2005 or 2006, I believe.
2005 was the last episode of Enterprise, yes.
Yeah, but his contract kept him there, I think, for another year while they were trying to come up with that Romulan War reboot thing that he was trying to do that never made it, and JJ took over and blah blah blah. Anyway, I just think this is obviously newsworthy because Rick, as we all know, is a very divisive figure in Star Trek's history, and I think has consciously tried to avoid interacting with the fans over the past 20 years. And I just think this is a really cool thing for him to do because Rick, I think, because he's been so quiet and has not really addressed a lot of the things that have been out there over the years, he's allowing other people to write his legacy.
Yeah.
And Jared, you and I have discussed this. And I think that him going out in public and, you know, basically getting his word on the record will be a really cool thing. And I think it's going to be a standing room only event when Rick shows up in Vegas.
Absolutely.
What do you guys think?
I've thought a lot about this in the context of politics. Like, if you're doing, and Brian and I both have a background in journalism, if you're writing an article and there's any kind of controversy at all and you're trying to get a hold of a politician and he or she refuses to get back to you, then they don't get to contribute anything to the article. And so the only thing that's in there will be what their opponents are saying in them. And if you're not a particularly popular figure in Star Trek, there are lots of people out there to say negative things about you. And so this will be the first time he's rebutted anything, had any kind of forum in a very long time.
Kayla, what do you think?
Yeah, well, I'm excited about the idea that he may be in Vegas. Obviously, I'd be really interested to hear what he has to say. He must realize that what you guys are saying, that, you know, he must realize that he has been absent and silent. And so I hope that that would mean that if he did decide to come to a convention, he would actually decide to say something of substance. You never know what you're going to get from people when they're up on stage, if they're actually going to say anything interesting or if they're going to kind of play it safe and try not to ruffle any feathers. So it'll be interesting.
It would be interesting. He's got a lot of, people have said a lot of negative things about him, and this will be his chance. It'll be interesting to see whether he has any rebuttal for some of the accusations, or if he simply tries to get his own record of events out there. It's hard to figure what he's going to do because he has been so quiet. And he has a kind of a standoffish relationship with the franchise itself, not just the fans. I always felt like Rick kind of kept certain parts of Star Trek at arm's length, particularly you know, I don't think he ever felt particularly comfortable relating to the fans. So this will be a challenge for him, I think.
See, the thing is, it's not just the fans. I have rarely heard any of the cast or crew say anything good about him either. I mean, like, was it Will Wheaton on Mission Log recently? And he was talking about Rick Berman treating him very poorly. And of course, the worst example, the one, and I'm not going to be able to remember their name right off the bat without a quick search of memory alpha, about there was the composer who'd won an Emmy for the music for Best of Both Worlds, and Berman fired him afterwards.
I think it was Ron Jones.
There you go. It just seems like he's left a trail of corpses dead and bloodied along the way. And so much of it also seems like he was also doing it while hero-worshipping Gene Roddenberry passed a degree that was sensible for his own career or certainly for the good of the franchise. Anyway, I don't want to speculate too much. I don't want to say too much negative about him. But yes, we're all excited to see what he'll have to say next year.
Yeah, that's going to be a huge, huge event to go to, I think.
Yeah, whenever there's something like that, I feel bad for who's ever stuck in Hall B opposite that at the same time.
Yeah, they really shouldn't. They shouldn't schedule people opposite some of the, like, they'll have Patrick Stewart on in the main theater and then some poor sap in the secondary theater, and it's like, oh, come on, guys, you didn't have to put anyone opposite him.
When they had the Data, Geordi, and Riker in the main hall list last year, it was opposite the Mission Log guys Hall B, and I was there to support them, and John started off and he said, John Champion, he said, I know what's going to happen in the next hall in 20 minutes from now, but if you can just please stay with us as long as you can. And I felt so bad for him.
Yeah.
Anyway, it'll be interesting to see what kind of reception Rick gets when he comes out on stage.
Absolutely.
Hopefully the fans will be polite.
I'm sure you guys know, what would you say are, like, the biggest, you know, things that people have brought up against Rick Berman? Or what are some of the major sticking points, do you think?
I think the primary one is kind of what we talked about last week, or not last week, last time, with TNG and some of the blandness of the characters in terms of their interactions, is just the idea of there were some things that Roddenberry said that they shouldn't do, and so very much as though it were written in a stone tablet from Mount Sinai, he wasn't going to let that happen. And in fact, there are some things that happened later on where you could tell... you know, like in the episode I was thinking of is Gambit, the sort of the quote-unquote space pirates episode, where that never would have happened if Roddenberry had still been alive, and I'm sure it was a push to get that episode in. And it's kind of a highlight of season 7. So I think that's the main one.
Mm-hmm.
Is slavish devotion to this TNG Roddenberryan ideal.
Yeah, that's part of it. I think there are other things, too. I think there was a point where I think... Star Trek, I think we all could agree that after Voyager, Star Trek probably needed a vacation. And Rick, being the company man that he is, went with the, you know, studio mandate to get a new Star Trek show in the air. And, you know, Voyager had its ups and downs, and some of it was great. But I think we all might agree that it might have been a good thing for Star Trek to have, you know, taken a powder for a good 4 or 5 years and come back with some fresh creative blood.
You say that would be a good idea in order to get new talent, new writers, new things like that?
Yeah. I think Rick and others stuck around for too long. And I think Star Trek began it felt like too much of the same all the time. It felt, everything started to feel similar to everything else. And that's kind of betrays the fact that it was the same production group more or less handling the franchise for, you know, from 1987 to 2005.
Yeah, and there's very obvious threads, especially between Next Generation, Voyager, and Deep Space Nine.
Yes, absolutely.
I do really appreciate what they did and what they tried to do with Enterprise. And, you know, I think...
Oh, me too.
I think Enterprise gets a lot of flack. And a couple of years ago, I did rewatch of the whole series, and I was watching it thinking, you know, this is pretty good. There's a lot of it I really enjoyed. And it was like they were starting to play with the idea of longer season-long story arcs, and I liked that. And yeah, so I think Enterprise gets a, you know, has a hard go of it, but I actually really enjoy the series for what it is.
Yeah, I agree that Enterprise is better than people remember it. The problem is, I don't think people compare Enterprise to the rest of the franchise. I think when it was on the air, people compared Enterprise to stuff like Battlestar Galactica and Firefly, which were just so much more interesting at the time.
Especially Battlestar had, I mean, because Firefly, I guess, got more of a cult following as time went on, but Battlestar was pretty popular during its era, so.
Yeah, and because there was no new, fresh creative blood at the top, it kind of the sensibility remained a very much a late 80s sensibility. So, and you know, you could also take Berman to task for how the feature film franchise worked out under him. I mean, he basically made one good movie out of four.
And in fact, as you were saying that about Enterprise, I think the time when the studio needed to take a risk was with Generations. And if there's any one film, I mean, we already had our podcast about TMP, but if there's any one film I want to spend an entire podcast talking about, it's Generations.
All right.
So at some point in the future.
I'd like to have that discussion as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't want to completely dump on Rick Berman either. Rick did a lot of good things in his stewardship of the franchise. But look, I mean, we could go on. We could have a whole podcast about Rick Berman. So maybe we should, maybe that's something we could revisit down the line, and maybe we should move on to the next topic. I don't know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, sure
Let's do
thing.
it.
All right, so now it's a little bit more Star Trek Beyond news, something we've all been watching for, and we haven't gotten much, which is not unexpected, this being a, well, by name, a J.J. Abrams production. It's not clear that he has a very large role in anything at this point, because he's very busy, obviously, with Star Wars. But nonetheless, we still have the extreme secrecy that we've gotten used to. But we have had a couple of things pop up lately, which are, however newsworthy they may be, that's all we're getting. And you know, some of it is spoilery, but very little. So we have really no idea about the plot, about the characters. So just the couple of things that I thought we could talk about a bit are mainly just the new filming in Dubai and what they did in Vancouver. So just Star Trek Beyond crew are currently in Dubai filming. We know for sure they've started second unit shooting. And I believe they may have started first unit shooting as well. And the other piece of news, the biggest thing we've had really, I think, in recent days has been Idris Elba's interview with MTV
MTV,
and talking about his quote unquote groundbreaking character. So there's a, I'll give you a quote from the article where Elba says, "Simon," meaning Simon Pegg, "and the team have written a very interesting, complex journey for my character," Elba said. "You've never seen me play a character like this." And he went on to stress that his character is completely original, and it's been promised already by Simon Pegg that he is not a Klingon. But again, we were also told that Khan was not going to be in Into Darkness, so, you know.
Right.
Grain of salt.
Yeah, grain of salt. Although, I do have to say, I mean,
Oh, a
so
grain of quadratidicale. That
Bob,
might be a
that's
little
right.
more.
Bob Orsi talked about that, about how he said it wasn't Khan, and then it ended up being Khan, and they were going back and forth. On the Mission Log podcast, and he talked about, I mean, the way that he logics it out is to say, well, we wrote this character and it wasn't Khan, and then we just thought, well, what if it was Khan, and then we made him into Khan, and so that was how they decided to get out of that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's been a lot of examples of when, you know, I think that's pretty common too. It's not just Star Trek. It's not just J.J. Abrams either, where either actors are told misled by the production company, or they're told to say certain things even though they're
Sure.
misleading for what's coming. You know, I could talk a lot about Game of Thrones and that a lot of the characters have given like misinformation about what's upcoming plot lines for Game of Thrones because they want to keep it so secret. And it's not
Sure.
clear, you know, whether the actors actually do know what's coming up, or I mean, in this case, in the case of Trek, they've all read the script, so that's not really possible here, but they're just keeping it so tight-lipped.
My dream job would be to do online misinformation campaigns for film studios. I have no idea how to get that job, but I think that would be so much fun.
I think you could be convincing at it too.
Thank you. Thank you. And you mentioned Game of Thrones. The best example of that was when the actress who plays Cersei, she sent out on Instagram a picture of a bunch of stones in the shape of a heart to try to like, tweak fans knows about the idea of the Lady Stoneheart character, and that was just brilliant. And so I imagine it's not beyond the realm of possibility for people in Star Trek to do the same thing too.
For sure.
So the images we've seen, like you said, it doesn't tell us a whole lot. I know that there's some photographs out there of something that appears to be the primary hull of a Federation starship.
Mm-hmm. It's just the very, very front rim of it.
Right. But we're not even sure that's what it is.
Should say at this point probably that because some people, myself included, except for this topic because I have to be informed, are very, very averse to any kind of spoilers in the little tiniest thing. So if you don't want to hear anything about these photos that we're going to talk about, which again, I'm telling you now, there's really nothing spoilery in them. But if you really want to make sure you don't hear anything, jump a little ahead in the podcast.
In order to skip this section, please move to 2448 on this podcast. So anyway, like I said, there appears to be like a damaged primary hull of a Constitution class looking starship.
Yeah.
That the crew, I think, was going to be standing on or something like that. Was that what it was? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, that was the one in Dubai. And that's the only like thing that you can really tell what it is. The stuff, there's pictures from Vancouver as well. TMZ just dropped a bunch of new ones. They're pretty crappy photos. It's like someone was running around the set snapping pics like surreptitiously, because most of them are blurry. But a couple of them show, you can tell that it looks like maybe the inside of the Enterprise and some of the interior shots, and then the exterior shots are in a quarry with some green screen rigs set up, some cranes, and some big orange thing, and some big thing that looks like maybe some kind of antenna or something, but, it could be anything. I mean, and again, that doesn't tell us anything about the plot. Like, we already knew they were probably going to be on an alien planet. So, at this point, it's just people, it's just like when, who was it that released, was it, who was it that released the photo of the shoulder patch?
It was somebody sent it out on Twitter, right?
Yeah, I think it was.
Didn't Justin Lin put it out himself?
I think it was Justin Lin.
He put it on his Twitter account. Yeah.
That's when he said something about use the name Star Trek Beyond, and we're like, okay, well now we had already known it was called Star Trek Beyond, but at that point it was the first time the director had said it. But yeah, he releases this photo, and everyone's like, just like has this one photo, and they're like, well, if we zoom and enhance and. It's just like tearing down this photo to try to pick out any little bit of information. And that's what it feels like with these photos too. It's just everyone's trying to write these big articles about, we think we see the front of the ship, and so that means there's going to be, the Enterprise is going to crash, there's going to be huge damage, blah, blah, blah. And, that may be true. But, to be honest, it's kind of grasping at straws, in my opinion.
I am pleased by what Idris Elba said, assuming he's telling the truth, that this is going to be an original character, and we're not going to revisit somebody else from the original series. I would like to see something new.
Sure. Me too.
I mean, what was the point of rebooting this thing if you're just going to go back and reuse the same characters and situations from a 50-year-old TV show?
Yeah.
Especially, if you're going to resurrect like such an iconic character from the TV show who's already been done so well in the movies, like I would have loved to have seen them to take a character from who's not as well known, like Kodos the Executioner or Garth of Izar, and do something with him. I particularly would love to see them do something with Kodos, because that's a character whose legacy, thanks to The Simpsons, is much greater than it was just because of that one episode.
It's true.
And the whole thing they do in those movies is Kirk dealing with the idea of needing a father figure. And so taking someone who'd already been a Starfleet captain or whatever, and who'd gone down the wrong path, I thought would work really well with that character's arc. Anyway, but that's all I'm going to say. I don't want to badmouth Star Trek Into Darkness. Right now. I don't want to badmouth it right now.
Of course.
But that's enough. That's enough.
Well, yeah, I think, we can just hope for the best. I think a lot of people seem to agree that they want original storyline with original characters. I mean, everyone's been excited whenever anyone said anything about, we want this to be more about exploration. Let's move away from the Earth-centric you know, view of everything. Let's really send them out on their 5-year mission. In fact, even as we were talking about Rick Berman earlier, I was looking up some of his tweets, and back in October of last year, almost a year ago, people were excited because he tweeted, well, he had two tweets. First he said, "Is it sacrilegious that I'm more excited about Larry Kasdan's upcoming Star Wars film than the next Star Trek movie?"
He didn't like Into Darkness.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, I see his point there, because Star Wars has been doing so much amazing marketing, and Brian and I were just talking about this, and you know, Paramount hasn't been doing much for Star Trek Beyond.
Well, the thing with Star Wars is it's an order of magnitude bigger than Star Trek just to begin with, and it's currently owned by the most successful entertainment franchise in human history.
Well, maybe Paramount could take some notes from them.
Yes, which in terms of some of the little things they're doing to build buzz right now, I think they're doing a great job with. I don't think they want to dump anything out now between now and December before The Force Awakens comes out, because they think it'll get buried in it. And so I bet they're going to wait until January, February to really start their promotional campaign.
Well, I hope so, because that'll be really exciting.
I just find it a little galling that there is so little going on, considering the franchise is turning 50 next year.
Yeah.
I don't understand it. I really don't. We should be getting inundated at the very least with merchandise by now. Mm-hmm. And it just seems very, very quiet.
Well, the biggest event going on is going to be the Creation Convention in Las Vegas, and that's run by Creation, not by Paramount.
Not by Paramount, right. Yeah.
So, yeah.
There's a whole separate discussion to be had about who controls Star Trek and...
Oh, yeah, the complicated legal foo-foo-ra.
Yeah, yeah.
In terms of Idris Elba, I think he's a fantastic actor. Everything I've seen him in, I've liked. I love Pacific Rim. I loved when he was on The Office. I loved him in The Wire. I haven't seen the show Luther. This friend of mine really wants me, has been pushing that really hard that I should watch that. And his premise is that Idris Elba should be the next Doctor Who, which I think is silly. I think if you're going to put him into any pre-existing franchise, he should be the next James Bond after Daniel Craig. Hmm. And so it's great that we have him in Star Trek for at least one movie.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, the casting is awesome. I love the casting. I just hope he's used well.
Yeah, me too. Because a lot of people are like, well, Benedict Cumberbatch, when Into Darkness came out, and still a lot of people were not disappointed in his performance, because he's an amazing actor, but just like I think he could have been used a bit better. But
yeah, yeah. Again. I mean, and if there's a character from the pre-existing franchise that I would love to see him reinvent, it sure as heck isn't Khan. It's Jean-Luc Picard. Wouldn't you love to see him as like a young Jean-Luc Picard?
Huh, maybe. I don't know. I'd have to think about that.
Yeah, I'd have to think about it too.
But yeah, Khan, it seemed a weird fit for him. But anyway, that is, yeah, we could talk about that for days.
Yeah.
Anyway, good. It is fun whenever they introduce some new little shot, whether it's, you know, an interview with him or an interview with Simon Pegg or the arm patch that you talked about, and it is wonderful internet to dissect that kind of things like that, and I love it.
I have a good feeling about the screenplay, guys. Simon Pegg is a very, very talented man.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And I think he's more sensitive to Trek fans' feelings about certain things than maybe some others have been.
Yeah, and not just because he's a Trekkie either. I mean, do you remember when he had some comment of, he said about the first script, about Bob Orci's script, that the reason Paramount didn't want to use it and they wanted to hire Simon Pegg to write the script is because it was, I think the quote was, too Star Trekkie.
Yeah.
And he got a lot of flack for saying that, obviously, because all the Trek fans were like, what? Obviously, we want it to be very Star Trek-y. But he actually wrote a response to that on his personal blog. And if you haven't read it, it's fantastic. I didn't know I knew he was a very intelligent man, obviously very well spoken, good at speaking for himself, but and expressing himself. But I was just blown away. But I was like, this guy, wow, he really knows what's going on. He's got a good head on his shoulders, and he really gets his point across.
Yeah, it was a very elegant response.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to sit back and wait, guys. Maybe we'll get a teaser trailer for Christmas or something. Let's see.
Never know. Hopefully.
That'd be nice.
Yep.
Should we move on to the next topic?
Let's move on to the next topic.
All right, take it away, Brian.
All right, so, you know, there's a couple of new fan productions that are out there that released new installments. Star Trek Continues just released their fifth episode called Divided We Stand. And the plot line of it is, the plot synopsis, I should say, is Kirk and McCoy are trapped in time while an alien infestation threatens the Enterprise. We're going to talk about this episode a little bit, so if you don't want any spoilers, you haven't watched it yet, and you want to know more about it, you might want to skip ahead right now. In order to skip this section, please move to 3114. Okay, so Star Trek Continues, fifth episode. I thought it was pretty well done. It
production values were good.
What's production values were sensational. It thrust, obviously, Kirk and McCoy into the Civil War era. One is a Confederate soldier, the other is a Union soldier, although that only comes into play briefly.
I was surprised that they didn't do more with that. So they wake up in the Civil War and Kirk is a Union soldier, right? McCoy is a Confederate soldier. And they're just like, oh, we better get out of here. And they kind of run away. And then they have one little thing where they run into some of the Union soldiers and they have to pretend like, oh, he's my prisoner and da-da-da. And then they're just like, oh, well, but he's a doctor, so it's fine. And then they talk to each other like colloquially the rest of the time. Like this rebel soldier is calling Union, this Union guy who's supposed to be his captor, calling him Jim and all this stuff and like being friendly with him. So I thought that was kind of a giveaway.
Yeah,
no, I agree. There were certain strange things like that. But I was deeply impressed by the way they were able to first, you know, represent the era, I thought, in a convincing way. And it was beautifully shot. I don't know. I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun.
I think just like all the other Continues episodes, I mean, it was nothing short of fantastic. And like Jared said, the production value is outstanding. The way they do all the shots, it really does feel like an original series episode. And that
Yeah. And the part that was best about that, that made it most feel like a TOS episode to me, are the musical cues.
Mm-hmm.
Which are just spot on. And maybe I'm not as familiar with the rest of the Star Trek Continues. Maybe they're all like that. But high five all around to the people in charge of the musical direction.
Yeah, the beautiful thing about their musical direction is that like they do use, obviously, cues directly from, you know, the original series music soundtracks. But they also score a fair amount of original stuff. And some of it is so well done that if you don't know the TOS music really well, you would think it was actually music from the original series. I mean, it's really, really well done.
For sure. I can never tell which is which.
Yeah. You have to really know that music really well in order to pick it out.
And the acting, too, is really... And it's getting better and better. I feel like a lot of the actors are really growing into their roles.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, it's every episode they get better.
And particularly, of course, we have to draw attention to Chris Doohan, who is a pleasure to see.
He is. Absolutely. He's great. He does such a great job.
Yeah, I'm completely comfortable now seeing him in his father's role. It took me a little while to get used to it. But Chris is doing a great job. They're all doing a great job.
The one thing I found that I didn't really like about this episode and about the last one as well is that I felt that they both started very abruptly. It's like 0 to 100 right from the get-go. And that works.
Okay.
That works sometimes, but it's like I didn't have time to figure out what was going on. Like, what was because the problem of the episode is some nanite things, they turn out to be nanites, have somehow gotten into the Enterprise computers, and then they somehow get into Kirk and McCoy. And I wasn't clear why it only got into Kirk and McCoy.
Yeah.
I think it was the explosion.
Yeah, but Spock and Scotty were the ones that were closest to the thing that overloaded.
Yeah, but it looked like the bulkhead blew up in Kirk and McCoy's face.
Okay.
I don't know.
I guess I didn't catch that. But no, that's definitely possible. But yeah, it's just like, I felt like I was thrown into the action a little too quickly. Like, I didn't have time to get my head around what was going on.
Sure, they didn't warm me up to it. I felt the same way, too.
But still, go ahead.
I think they wanted to really race to the them waking up in the past.
Yeah.
But, you know. I agree with what you're saying.
But yeah, overall, I really enjoyed it. I thought the message was really, I don't know if I want to say touching, but like really actually quite powerful message that that Kirk gives all these. He has like several speeches, mini speeches throughout the episodes, but he gives these really awesome speeches to this kid Billy, who ends up going and like saving the day out on the battlefield. It's just about what freedom is, and I just think that was, I just thought that was really cool. I thought he did a great job. It was well written, and he did a great job delivering the lines.
And they are very Kirk speeches.
They so are.
Not only are they Kirk-esque, but they just feel very much like they would have come been written in the 60s. So, the thing that it reminded me of is an episode of The Twilight Zone called The Quality of Mercy, which actually has Leonard Nimoy in a small role, where we see it's like the last days of World War II, and it's a battle between the Americans and the Japanese, and we have one guy who's a lieutenant in the Americans, and he just wants to kill all these Japanese people, and then he is magically switched over to the other side, and suddenly he's a Japanese guy who doesn't want to see the Americans killed, and he realizes that we're all human beings and we all need to stick together, and it's not just about how many people you can kill. So it felt very much idiosyncratic to the time period that they're trying to capture. So my applause to that.
Well, let's move on a little bit, and because we're running out of time here, let's also talk about I know Brian, you've been following the Red Shirt Diaries.
I have. Red Shirt Diaries is a little mini, I guess a web, mini web series that's done by Ashley Robinson, who plays a lowly security red shirt on the TOS Enterprise. And it's a comedy show. The episodes typically last 4, 5, 6 minutes. And they will, they'll adapt episodes of the original series and show you what Ensign Williams, which is her character, shows her experiences going through certain experience, certain situations that the original crew did. And it's been very cute. They opened the season with the menagerie. They did it in two parts, and I believe last week they did Conscience of the King. It's worth checking out. It's a cute little series that they have running there. It's very tongue-in-cheek. It's very affectionate to the original series, and I recommend everybody check it out. It's a lot of fun. It doesn't have the production values of Star Trek Continues or anything, but that's not the point of it. It's really nicely done.
I love the idea of a comedy series based around people on like the lower decks of the Enterprise. In fact, I remember I spent an entire Vegas con with a friend of mine just hashing out our series idea, which was going to be called The Lower Decks, and it was going to be exactly like that. And it was just going to be like ridiculous things happening, in the background of the people who are stuck. And like we always used to laugh about Chief O'Brien, and there's that comic Chief O'Brien at work, which is fantastic, because I always had that feeling about him. Like, here's this poor guy who's just like stuck in, like, what does he do in the transporter room all day when there's not people transporting? And half the time they transport people directly to the bridge anyway.
That's true.
Anyway, I love the idea of this series. I'm so glad someone's doing something like that. And I know a lot of Trek fans don't like when you spin comedy onto Star Trek, but I think it's fantastic.
Oh my God, come on, really?
Yeah, some people are just like, oh no, I don't want a comedy series related to Star Trek or anything. Like, it has to be, all of it has to be totally serious.
I think that comes from people feeling like they're being made fun of, specifically with stuff like the documentary Trekkies or like the Get a Life Saturday Night Live sketch. So maybe that's where it comes from.
Yeah, maybe. Although, I
But the
mean,
thing is, when we're the ones telling jokes about our own culture that we understand so well to the point where we can make in jokes that nobody else will get, I think we have to be comedic.
yeah, I agree. So, I also wanted to give a little bit of a shout out to a new book that just came out, Star Trek Costumes: 5 Decades of Fashion from the Final Frontier, which you can buy now on Amazon for like $40. It looks like it's a really nice book. I know several of my friends who do costuming, who do either cosplay or some of the people who like do more professional costume work, have gotten this book just to take a look at it. I think it sounds like it's a really fantastic resource for cosplayers. And the reviews are all really, really positive. So I'll be excited to take a look at that when I get my hands on it.
It's actually amazing that a book like that hadn't come out sooner.
Yeah, seriously.
I mean, talk about a 50 years worth of costumes and what a rich, rich.
Yeah, and to have the like high definition photos of the costumes that you can see easily, because all the cosplaying that I've done, we've had the TV on in the background while we're sewing, and you know, a blurry freeze frame of the person that whose costume we're trying to create, and that's never a great way to do it. So this will be really useful for details.
Absolutely. And just for historical purposes, too, there are a lot of Trek historians out there. They're going to love having access to this kind of detail.
Yeah, it should be cool to see it.
And there's another book out there that just came out, which is the autobiography, I believe, of James T. Kirk.
Oh, interesting.
Which is written by David Goodman, who wrote the that Federation book a few years ago about the history of the United Federation of Planets.
Mm. Nice.
So I haven't read that one, and none of us have read any of the other books, but we've been hearing good things about them.
There's another book that's coming out that I wanted to give a little shout-out to. It's called Star Trek The Next Generation Warped, and it's basically the season 8 of TNG. Oh, it started as somebody's Twitter feed at TNG _S8, and he'll shoot out like amusing little tweets about episode ideas of what could have happened if the series had gone on past All Good Things. It's got 90,000 followers, and I strongly recommend it. I think it's hilarious. Most of them involve Data and Geordi having some kind of crazy adventure while Barclay gets transformed into something.
I love TNG Season 8. When I found it, I was just like, this is like a treasure. There's so many. It goes back so far, and there's just a treasure trove of hilarious stuff in there. And I'm just like, you know, Geordi and Wesley are trapped in a cave. Meanwhile, Picard and Beverly are trapped in a different cave. Troy, a different cave. You know, it's just like, oh my god, and it's just, I can imagine them actually being episodes.
That's what makes them so funny.
Whoever writes that is right on the nose. I love that Twitter.
Yeah, like I'm looking at one here. Q imprisons Riker in Data's debut novel, quote, The Werewolf Wolf, unquote. The tale of a wolf who's bitten by a werewolf, based on a drawing by Geordi.
When's the book coming out, Jared?
It says October, so it's
this month.
It should be out this month.
Any moment, people. Any moment.
Yeah.
Why don't we do our final thing? Jared, you can do that?
Yes. Okay, so something that I'd like to try to do, we're still figuring out the format for this shuttle pod here, but I wanted to end every episode with a Trek anecdote or a Trek-nicdote from our lives. Because this is something where, you know, we consume so much of the TV show, we've read the books, we dress up like it, but the part of it, of the Trek franchise that I enjoy are just the little moments of your life where somebody will make a reference when you're in an elevator and you'll kind of smirk because you're the only guys who get it. And the one that I wanted to share, this is from a couple years ago when I was at a leadership retreat for this company I worked at, and there were about 200 of us in the room, and the CEO, who was also a Star Trek fan, he made a reference while this motivational speaker is doing like this Q&A with us to a Kobayashi Maru. Like, we don't want to, I can't even remember exactly what it was, but he just threw out the term Kobayashi Maru. And I kind of smirked because I knew that Kobayashi Maru is, of course, shorthand for the no-win scenario. But the motivational speaker had no idea what it meant. And he thought it meant like a utopia or something, like some ideal goal. And he tried to fake it for the rest of the talk. And he'd refer back to the Kobayashi Maru having no idea that it was the exact opposite of what he was talking about.
Amazing.
So I went up to the CEO afterwards and I talked to him and said, hey, I appreciated your Wrath of Khan reference. And he's like, yeah, I don't think the guy on stage got it. But so there you go. There's my first Trek anecdote.
That's great.
Yeah, I thought it was hilarious.
The Kobayashi Maru is the name of my fantasy league baseball team, by the way.
How well does your
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy, believe me.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. I love the joke in Undiscovered Country where they're there on Ruripente and Dr. McCoy says, one day, one night, Kobayashi Maru.
Yep.
So with that, thanks everyone for listening. And remember to follow us on Twitter and at Trek Movie and like us on Facebook to get all of our updates. And do communicate with us. Get in touch. And we will look at your comments and might even read some of them on the air. So tell us what you thought of the show, what you thought about what we discussed, what you'd like to hear us talk about, anything that's on your mind. gives a tweet. Thanks, everyone. See you next time.